Hello, friends, and welcome to this episode of Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special 10-part series on health equity. This series is part of our ongoing podcast, Weekly Witness, which equips Texans of all faiths for leadership in policy advocacy and civic engagement. I'm your host and Texas Impact's Outreach Director, Scott Atnip. You can find more information about today's episode, including blog posts and other resources on our website at texasimpact.org/weeklywitness. If you've heard the expression, your lifespan should be a function of your genetic code, not your zip code, you've been introduced to the idea of health equity. In the past 10 years, media attention has focused increasingly on the reality that health status, longevity, and other indicators of physical and emotional well-being are functions of a complex set of factors, including race, income, intergenerational wealth, educational status, and more. It turns out that having health insurance and access to healthcare are just one piece of the puzzle, although a very important piece. And health equity should be a primary concern for faith communities, because local congregations interact with vulnerable people through a variety of outreach activities, so we are well positioned to understand the connections between the many inputs that impact health. Things like healthy food, the availability of safe, affordable housing, and even proximity to sources of pollution. Those are all things we call social determinants of health, the things that drive health status. We hope this podcast series inspires you to learn more about health equity and the social determinants of health in your local community so that you can be an effective advocate for a healthy future for all Texans. And I'm honored to be joined today by a very special guest, Scott Kibbe, who is the Director of Government Affairs with the Texas Healthcare Association. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you taking the time. I wonder if you'll start out today by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and the Texas Healthcare Association.
Okay. The Texas Healthcare Association has existed since 1951, and our job is representing the state's nursing homes. Our main goals are we, of course, advocate for the nursing homes at the Capitol, but we also work to educate, have a very extensive education program, educate our staff members at facilities as to best practices and how to really raise the quality of the care that we offer.
Well, that certainly is important work. And so, you know, we're in the midst of this health equity series. I wonder how you would define the term health equity.
I think it's just having access to the to quality care that everyone has that, and that's something that even in long term care is something that we struggle with.
Yeah, so we're interested today to talk about senior health. Where do you see inequity in health for seniors? And I guess in terms of healthcare, many would assume that seniors would be fine because they have access to Medicare. How would you respond to that assumption?
Well, unfortunately, that's not true. We do have Medicare residents in nursing facilities, but they're only there for short-term rehab. That's all Medicare will pay for. If their condition is serious enough, they may stay. But they will have to find another payer source, either private pay or Medicaid. The important thing for people to know about nursing home care in Texas is about two-thirds of nursing home residents in Texas rely on Medicaid.
Wow.
To help pay for part of their care. That is, those rates, that's funded both state and federally, but the state sets the rates. The federal government can match it. There are some facilities that take no Medicaid at all. They're completely private pay. There are some that are almost all Medicaid, but most have a pretty good mix. Most facilities will have a little bit of both. But more and more, the residents are relying on Medicaid. What happens is what's happened in Texas is that we're the lowest funded when it comes to Medicaid. The state has not kept up with costs. In fact, according to the state's own numbers, a facility loses $27 per day per resident for each Medicaid resident that they have. They try to make up for that with what private pay they have, or with Medicare, those short-term stays that pay a little bit better. But that gets more and more difficult. The state has not increased that rate since 2013. In the meantime, medical costs continue to grow and becomes more of a struggle. So if you're at a facility, if you rely on Medicaid, or you're in a facility where a lot of the residents do, That facility is struggling to stay staffed, to have good quality staff. We for a nurse assistant starting out, a certified nurse assistant, you can make more at Bucky's, you can make more at Rudy's than you can for a very hard job. So it makes it very hard to keep that staff. If you're able to be, if you've got enough money and you're in to set aside to pay for your own care, you have that option of being perhaps in a private pay facility, where because they have they're charging more than Medicaid will pay. They have better paid staff. They have more of the extras, more of the things you want. You really will get better quality. So that's really the hard thing. Even if you're not on Medicaid now, if you're in a nursing home for a long time, and in Texas, I believe it's about $70,000 a year on the average, and that's one of the lowest in the country. But about $70,000 a year on the average, if you want to for your care in a nursing home. Most people don't have savings that's going to last very long at that rate, so that we'll have to transition to Medicaid. I think the other thing where equity comes in on this is it does depend on your zip code a little bit. Nursing homes tend to be built in fast growth areas. Right now, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, Houston, there are developers who gamble that the rates will come up and that the population of residents will be there for them. But if you're in a rural area, that's not so much the case. They're not building a lot of facilities there. And as there's more of a squeeze on the industry, as it's harder to keep nursing homes open, the first ones that close are always in those rural areas, which means if you want to visit, if you're living in a small town and you want to be able to visit your mother in a facility, you may end up having to drive a long way. And that's not good for the resident either, because we know you get better outcomes when you have family involved, when there are people there checking in on them and caring for them.
And I assume the outcomes are, this is probably an obvious question, but the outcomes are probably a lot better health outcomes in those private pay facilities.
Yeah, for the most part, because they can pay staff better, they can keep more staff. The problem nursing homes have, there are a lot of good people who work in them and a lot of people who really know what they're doing, but they can't keep enough. I hear from people who have family and facilities now, and that's what keeps coming up, is that we just, you know, they didn't have enough people on the shift. They only had one for our hallway, only one CNA. We couldn't find somebody when we wanted it. And when you look at the ratings that Texas gets, and Texas nursing homes, we're not proud to say it, but we do rank at the bottom. What they get hit with the most is understaffing. And that's something that's only going to get worse because the state's aging.
Yeah,
there would be a lot more people needing to access that.
I assume understaffing and staff turnover would be another problem, huh?
Yeah, staff turnover, it averages about 90%. There are facilities where it averages well over 100%. So you're turning the same position over twice in a year. A big part of that is not being able to pay them what they're worth. Very frustrating for facilities losing good people. But a lot of it too is just having people available. Even if you have the money to pay, nurses are hard to find, and in a lot of communities, they're very hard to find.
So, anything else on long-term care that should tie into this conversation that you think folks should know about?
I think when talking with equity, I think there's just a struggle with facilities, and it's those people who will rely on Medicaid when their time comes that I think will feel that the most, that may have poor quality care now. We hope not. We have no people are doing their best to prevent that, but who are most likely to lose access, may not be able to get into a facility as this problem gets worse.
So, Scott, I'm certainly enjoying this conversation and hope you all are as well who are listening. Hang with us for just a minute as we take a moment to thank our sponsors.
You're listening to Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special podcast series on health equity. Texas Impact is Texas's oldest and largest interfaith advocacy network. We work for freedom, justice, and opportunity for all people. We advance public policies that are consistent with broadly held religious social teachings by mobilizing people of faith to talk to policymakers and to other members of their communities. To find out more and get involved, go to our website, www.texasimpact.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Reimagining Justice is made possible by the generous support of Methodist Healthcare Ministries of South Texas, serving humanity to honor God by improving the physical, mental, and spiritual health of those least served in the Rio Texas Conference of the United Methodist Church. Methodist Healthcare Ministries is a private, faith-based, not-for-profit organization dedicated to creating access to healthcare for the uninsured in South Texas through direct services, community partnerships, and strategic grant making. Reimagining Justice is also supported by the DentaQuest Partnership for Oral Health Advancement, revolutionizing oral health to create an effective and equitable system that results in improved oral health and well-being for everyone. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of Texas Impact and do not necessarily reflect the views of our sponsors. If you appreciate this podcast, we hope you will consider financially supporting Texas Impact with a monthly contribution. You can donate securely and easily on our website, texasimpact.org. And now, back to our program.
All right, thanks for hanging with us. So, Scott, our target audience for this Texas Impact Weekly Witness Series is communities of faith and people of faith throughout Texas. Talk to us some about how people of faith throughout the state and local congregations can be involved in this issue.
Well, one of the ways is to really take ownership of the facility. It's community. It may have a company's name on it, or there are a lot of churches, of course, that own nursing homes. But it's really belongs to the community. We don't want to put people. Forget about people when they get to the stage of life, when they get to the point where they're old and frail. And so we want to be, you know, we want to keep people coming into the homes. We're really promoting right now a campaign to visit a nursing home. Just go by when you can. Volunteer if you can. Nursing homes need volunteers. I volunteered for a while at a nursing home here in Austin. All I did was I like to write, so I talked to some of the residents and got their stories, and they had very interesting stories. I talked to one who played football at UT with Bobby Lane. I talked to another who was lived in Germany during World War II, escaped as a child. People in facilities, we try to remind them. There's one facility I know that used to put the picture of the person when they were young on the door. On their door to remind people this was somebody who worked very hard, accomplished a lot, lived good active lives, and can never forget that. Churches are very involved in nursing homes. Any nursing home you go to, you'll see a big chart up in their calendar, and there's always several churches that have services, a Catholic service, a Protestant service, sometimes several different kinds. And certainly at Christmas, a lot of people come in and help at that time, and that's great. We want that to continue, but we would like to also have more of that year-round. As I said, coming in to do whatever's needed, helping write the stories. A lot of facilities take the residents who are able on trips to the movies and shopping. They love to have volunteers come along at that time, but it just makes such a difference. You know, there's a statistic that said about 60% of the residents in nursing homes do not have anyone who visits them regularly.
Wow.
It's very hard. It's not a good day when you go into a nursing home. People want to keep their independence. You know, we understand that. It's very difficult. Very difficult to give that up. Depression is a major issue in nursing homes with the residents, and staff does their best to try to address that. But it's so much better when you have people. People coming in there, people checking on them, people who care. They talked about a story that I'd heard about a group had come in, I think a church group had come in for around Christmas for an event, and a woman got very dressed up. And they asked her, where you're going? You're going somewhere or something? She says, no. She said, just no one ever comes to visit me, so I wanted to look nice.
Yeah,
That's you can have such an impact with that, because just like I said, just remembering that without, you know, we don't want to be a kind of society that just forgets about our elderly and you're no longer of use, and you know, you're just your time is ending. You know, we need to continue. I think we'll reflect society, our values a lot, I think, if we continue to cherish those elderly. They still have a lot to teach us. I always enjoy getting to talk to them anytime I can.
Yeah, my wife was the youth director at a United Methodist Church for a while and used to go every year the week of Thanksgiving and help serve the Thanksgiving meal at the local nursing home. And so that was always a lot of fun, and the students enjoyed that. But I think that idea of doing something throughout the course of the year could really help improve outcomes for.
Absolutely. Even just coming by for a visit. Even just coming by, the staff will work with you on that and help you kind of get around and see people. Play bingo, play dominoes. You know, there's always a game of dominoes going on in about every facility I've been to. You know, just giving that little bit of time and you know, reminding those people, you know, that they're important. I think people sometimes try to avoid that because it can be depressing, and you think about your own mortality and that this may be all of us someday. But I think that's just all the more reason to kind of embrace that and start learning now and start, you know, kind of treating those people as you hope you'd like to, as you might like to be treated someday.
Yeah. So my guess is, and we always think it's important for congregations to be involved in that relational work and understanding the needs of everybody in our community. And my guess is that there will be times when church folks go into some of these facilities and realize that we need some systematic changes, maybe because they're understaffed or whatever the case may be. So what do you recommend people do during this, during this legislative interim to engage on some of these issues on a systematic level?
I think we really need to work on educating and raising awareness of the fact that this state is growing older fast. People over the age of 85 is going to quadruple. The period I had started in 2010, between 2010 and 2050, it's going to quadruple. People over 85, that's an age where a high number will need long-term care. Also, you know, people lower than that age, people over 65, it's growing very fast too. It matter of a few things, you know, people living longer, obviously. A lot of people like to retire to Texas. So those are all going to factor in, and it's going to put more demands on long-term care and on those trying to have proper staffing. Right now, nursing homes are struggling with staffing, and that's just going to get worse if we don't get out ahead of it. So I think it's about letting people know that this is coming and it's got to be addressed now. The state needs to take this seriously. They need to invest in it as they've not invested before. States that fund nursing homes better, fund Medicaid better, get better results. It's clear we've had studies and everything that line it up. Texas has tried to do this on the cheap and thought, well, we can get by another 2 years with this, and they'll find the money somewhere. And they do. Most facilities just cut to the bone so they can continue to provide service. But that's getting more and more difficult, and the quality does get reduced because of that and lack of staffing. So it's time, you know, time to really let people know we've got to get out ahead of this. If we wait too long, that gap, that workforce shortage, it's not going to be solved overnight. You're just not going to be able to do that. You know, it's got to be something that we start to address now, and make it clear to our legislators that seniors are a priority, and then this kind of care is very important. Well, I say Texans, we cherish our elderly. There are some places maybe not as much, but in Texas we do. We appreciate what they've done to build this state, to put us where we are. We appreciate the history that they bring. And we need our legislature to start backing that up. And it's not just a matter of funding. You know, funding is very important to close that gap, but we need to be talking about how do we get our workforce directed to the places where they're going to be needed in the future. This is where the jobs are going to be. You're going to always have to have people to work in nursing homes once they reach that level of need, and Texas has. One thing Texas has going for them is that we have a lot of people coming here. We have a potential workforce. We've just got to find out how to connect them into those jobs so that they can help meet our needs, and then of course also have good steady jobs for those Texans for years to come.
Is that the argument you would make to more rural legislators, or is there anything you'd say to them specifically? Since you mentioned earlier that a lot of the facilities are now being in, you know, more urban or suburban areas?
I would tell you, facilities in rural areas are really struggling. There are a lot of reasons for that. You don't have access. As I mentioned before, Medicare pays a little better than Medicaid, and they count on that to help with their costs. But they don't have that access to the big hospitals, and it's the transportation is an issue. If you're in Cotulla, Texas, you know, getting those residents from San Antonio, having to often fly them in if they're going to come. So that's one of the challenges. And the fact is, it's just as there's less demand in those small areas, it's those companies will make decisions, hard decisions. That do I want to keep this facility where I only have 33 residents, but at the same time I need beds in Dallas. That's happening more and more. There have been towns. I think it was Kroll, Texas, that a few years ago they were going to close down their facility. There were their one nursing home. It was the biggest employer in town, and the town really had to rally to keep that facility there. But it's still a very small facility. Still a very old facility. When companies have to make, when nursing home providers have to make that decision about closing facilities, your rural facilities are first on the chopping block. The other thing is, we talk about having trouble finding the workforce, and those small towns, that's really hard to find RNs. You have to have an RN as a director of nursing, and that's another reason that I think that those facilities are most often first to close.
All right, so we've got our homework for today is going to be for congregations and folks throughout the state to look for opportunities to volunteer and really involve yourself in the nursing homes in your community. We're going to start talking to our legislators about the importance of funding and making sure these facilities are adequately staffed. Anything else you'd like to leave folks with today?
I don't think so. I think it's just, I think covered everything. Just remembering, continuing to cherish our seniors. I'm in a situation, my parents are close to that age. My mother has dementia. My father's 82 in good health, but he's 82. And people often don't want to face these decisions until the last minute. And I would encourage people, start thinking about it. Start talking to your family about what you want, about your plans. Long-term care insurance is something to look into. I think it's still something that's kind of difficult and can be kind of expensive, but these are solutions we need to work on. I've been very pleased. I know a couple of Democratic candidates have put long-term care into their health care plans, and that's great, because I think it'll get that conversation started that's way overdue.
So where can we find more information or anything you'd like to shamelessly plug?
I just encourage you. Our association's website has a lot of information, as is our national association, American Healthcare Association, gives great information, AARP as well. You can find good information on their sites. And especially if you are looking for a nursing home, if you find yourself in that situation, Nursing Home Compare is a site that CMS runs. And it'll give you ratings on all the facilities, some of the reasons why. I think it helps a lot. We always steer people that when they start looking for a nursing home.
All All right, Scott. Well, thank you so much for the time. You and I just met for the first time today, and I appreciate getting to know you and for your work in public service. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for tuning in today. We hope that this conversation has helped you better understand health equity in regards to seniors and the importance of long-term care. And so thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to hearing what you've been able to do with this content today and how you're living it out in your local communities. So I hope you enjoyed the conversation. We will release more content next week. Until then, I hope that you will rate and review the podcast and share this content with your friends and congregations. And if you've made it this far in the program, you clearly appreciate the content. So please make sure you and your congregations are members of Texas Impact by going to texasimpact.org/join. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Until then, let's get to work.
Reimagining Justice is a production of Texas Impact and the Texas Interfaith Center for Public Policy. Engineered by David Vassallo, executive producer Bea Moorhead. Our series is recorded in Austin, Texas.